It is well known that the minhag on Erev Rosh Hashanah is to do Hataras Nedarim. There's a question where exactly this minhag developed from. In what generation did it start? It seems that the Talmidim of the Arizal are the first ones that quote the minhag. Reb Chaim Vital and his Talmidim are the ones who have it. But the Shari Tshuva on Shulchan Aruch says that the reason why we have developed such a practice to do Hataras Nedarim on Erev Rosh Hashanah is based on a Gemara Meseches Nedarim, Daf Chav Gimel. Says the Gemara, somebody who wants that all of the promises, all of the various nedarim that I made throughout the year should no longer be effective. Yama bein Rosh Hashanah v'yomer, you should stand up before Rosh Hashanah and you should say, kal nedarim shani asid lidar b'shana zu, yihiyu b'telim. Says the Gemara, a person should proclaim, a person should declare, any nedarim that I've made in this year, yihiyu b'telim, they should be null and void, and therefore you are no longer bound by whatever you may have promised, by whatever you may have assured others. And this is the reason why we do Hataras Nedarim both on Erev Yom Kippur, by Kol Nidre, Leil Yom Kippur, and we also do it Erev Rosh Hashanah by Hataras Nedarim, says the Shari Shuva. That's basically what the Gemara says. You should stand up between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and that's what you should do. So there's a major question, why do we do it twice? What is accomplished if we've already said on Erev Rosh Hashanah Hataras Nedarim? And we're going to say on Hataras Nedarim, we wanted to go retroactively for everything that happened since the last Rosh Hashanah. Why do we have to go a week later on Erev Yom Kippur and do the same thing by Kol Nidre? It's a good question. The Achronim discuss it. But basically, this is a very widespread practice. And there's a good reason for it. Reb Shlomo Kluger has an additional interpretation as to why it is that the practice developed that we say Hataras Nedarim on Erev Rosh Hashanah. Says Reb Shlomo Kluger, perhaps the reason why is because the pasuk says, "Mi yale behar Hashem, umi yakum b'mekom kadsho." Our objective in this time of year is to try and become as close as we possibly can to Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Now, says Reb Shlomo Kluger, you look at the next words in that kapitel Tehillim. What are we told? Who are the ones who are closest to Hashem? Niki chapayim avar levav. It's somebody who is clean. It's somebody who has never stolen from others. Asher lo nasa lashav nashiva lo nishba lemirma, a person who never swears falsely, a person who is always true on their word. And therefore, says Reb Shlomo Kluger, if your objective in this time of year is mi yale b'har Hashem, that I want to raise and elevate myself to be close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you have to follow the instructions that the Psukim say, which is lo nishba lemirma, you have to be a person who is true to your word. And therefore, the Achronim say this is why the minhag has developed, the Shulchan Aruch speaks about it, of Hataras Nedarim on Erev Rosh Hashanah, and then we do it once again on Leil Yom HaKippur. From the whole institution of Nedarim that the Torah speaks about in Parshas Matos, the Parsha of Nedarim and Hataras Nedarim, one can learn a very important lesson, and that is that we have the ability with our mouths, we have our ability with our speech to create and to establish a mitzvah or an aveira that was never there before. What does that mean? How so? Say, for example, person gets up one day and says, I take a shvua that for whatever reason, for dietary purposes, I'm going to eat this loaf of bread, or I'm going to eat this apple, I'm going to eat whatever it is that's in my house that I feel is important for me to eat, and I take a shvua that I'm going to eat that item. The halacha is that you now are performing a mitzvah when you go ahead and you're engaged in eating the item. So the same way the Torah says that I have a mitzvah of achilas matzah on Leil Pesach, and the same way I have a mitzvah of achilas marah on Leil HaSeder, and the same way I have a mitzvah of all kinds of things, Suda Shabbos and Suda Yomtiv, I now have an additional mitzvah that the Torah never dreamt of, and that is, this Shabbos I have an obligation, or this day I have an obligation to go and fulfill my mitzvah of eating the apple, or eating the loaf of bread, because I took a shvua upon myself to do so. I have now added a mitzvah to the Taryag Mitzvah HaTorah. The same goes in the opposite direction. Someone makes a shvua shalo ochal tikal zu. I know that this kind of item of food is very unhealthy for me. I don't want it, but I have a very difficult time holding myself back from eating it. So I take a shvua. I swear that I will not eat this item. Now I perform a mitzvah every time I have a taiva, every time I have an urge to eat it, and I choose not to, I perform a mitzvah by not doing so, or I violate an aveira if I would go ahead and eat that article of and eat that item of food. The same goes, let's say, similarly, if someone is makdish an item. So let's say in my house I have a table, I have a chair, I have a car, and I say I now give it over to the property of Hegdish. I want it to belong to the Beis Hamikdash. So the halacha is that now it becomes the property of Hagdish, Amiraso Legavoa, Kimisiraso Lahadio, the same way when I make a transaction with another person, once I hand it over to you, it belongs to you. So too, by just saying that it belongs to Hagdish, that is good enough. We don't need any transaction. It already belongs to Hagdish alone by saying it. What if somebody comes along and uses that car? What if somebody comes along and uses that table or that chair that I already designated and donated to Hagdish, to the Beis Hamikdash? The halacha is, he's chayiv misa bidei shamayim. You're chayiv misa bidei shamayim. How is it possible? I donated something to Hagdish, it now belongs to Hagdish, and because of something that I've done, now the other person who violates what I have done is going to be chayiv misa bidei shamayim, is going to lose their life? How can that be? And what you see clearly is that we have such an incredible power in our mouth, in our speech, that we can create averus, we can create mitzvos, we can make somebody be chayiv misa bidei shamayim if they're not careful with the item that I was makdish. And that is a very important halacha to be aware of, that when, the way one uses their voice or their mouth is a very important thing to take a look at and to think about how careful are we with the words that we speak. After all, the Torah says, Vayipach ba'apav nishmas chayim, that the Ribbono Shel Olam blew into Adam HaRishon a nishmas chayim. What exactly is the neshama of a person? All of the Rishonim are trying to figure out, what does it mean that we have a neshama? What's so unique about the human being? And the Targum Unkelis famously writes, Ruach Memalala, the neshama of a person is the ability to speak. And I think what it means is that because the Ribbono Shel Olam invested in all of us, Etzelem Elokim, it means that He empowered us, and He gave us the opportunity to be mekadesh things, to aser things, to make a mitzvah, to make an avera, to take a neder, to take a shvua, and all of this is something that we have to be very, very careful about whenever we use our words. Because of this, the Mishnah Brura writes in Ilchas Tainis, Tzarech la'ashkia harbe b'shlita al koach hadibur, says the Mishnah Brura, one has to be very careful to invest time thinking about how we use our speech. And therefore, he writes, because of that, if a person has a choice, if I feel I need to do tshuva for whatever reason, I've done an avera, I admit to the fact that I made a mistake, I know I did something wrong, I know I need to go through the process of tshuva, and now I have an option, either to go ahead and fast in order to be mechaper for that which I've done wrong, or to take upon myself a tainus dibur. I'm going to eat and drink all day long, but I'm not going to speak. Says the Mishnah Brura, Tov she'adam yikabel tainus dibur velo tainus achila. It is more effective for the tshuva process if a person chooses to take upon themselves a tainus dibur, then to take upon yourself a tainus achila, because you will accomplish more. It's harder to train ourselves how to speak nicely, how to speak appropriately, how to say the right thing, how to hold ourselves back when we're not supposed to say something, than it is for a person to sit and fast all of aseres yemei tshuva, and to fast all the things that you want to take upon yourself in order to go through the tshuva process, says the Mishnah Brura. More relevant would be if a person would make sure to take upon themselves a tainus dibur, to understand the power of speech, the power of our mouths, what we can create and what can be destroyed by using it in an inappropriate fashion. So the Chafetz Chaim has another comment in the Shmiras HaLashon, which is an amazing one. He comments on a Gemara Maseches Chulin, Daf Pei Tes, where the Gemara says, Ma umnasa shel adam olam hazeh? What is the craft, what is the calling of a person in olam hazeh? Says the Gemara based on a pasuk, Yaseh atzmo ke'ilim. Our job in this world is Yaseh atzmo ke'ilim. It's not an easy thing to do. You have to learn how to make yourself like a mute every so often. You have to learn how to hold yourself back from saying that which you impulsively want to respond, want to react to someone. So the Chafetz Chaim says, why is it that the Gemara there, based on the pasuk, refers to a person who holds back their speech, who holds back what it is that they want to say? Why is that referred to as an umnis? That's not my job, that's not my profession. Why do we refer to that as ma umnasu shel adam? What is the profession, what is the craft of a person in olam hazeh? I wouldn't say that. I would say you're a carpenter, I would say you're a teacher, you're an educator, you're a banker, you're a lawyer. That's my profession. What does it mean? My profession is that I hold myself back from speaking, that I know how to make myself like an ilam. Says the Chafetz Chaim as follows. The reason why is because ki yadua shim yirtza adam she'enenu uman. Imagine you have a person who is totally unskilled, a person who is not qualified at all, a person who is not experienced. For imagine myself for an example. I'm looking at my porch yesterday, I'm trying to figure out about a sukkah, I have 6 left hands, I don't know how to do anything. I don't know how to hold a hammer straight, I don't know how to do anything. So I called someone over to my house, he starts measuring, he starts looking, he figured it out very quickly. It's very easy for that person who knows what he's looking for, who knows what to measure, who knows what beams we need. It's very easy for them to figure it out. Says the Mishnah Brura, imagine you have somebody who is called upon lasos ezekli. Somebody asked me to build a sukkah. I don't know how to do it. I don't even know how to start. He says, afsha b'sichlo, even though in my imagination, I can imagine what I want the structure to look like, I can figure out all the different things that I'd like to be involved in this thing that I want to construct. However, in the end of the day, writes the Mishnah Berurah, because my hands are not used to doing this, because I'm not qualified, because I'm not skilled, therefore I will have no idea how to do it. And the same works over here with regard to our speech. He says, you ask anybody, is it better to talk a lot or is it better to be quiet? Any normal person who thinks just for a moment would understand that it makes a lot more sense to be quiet more often than I speak, because I get myself in trouble, I say things that I regret later on, I say things that are hurtful to other people, I know that it gets me into trouble and I know I speak too much. And yet, we don't all have the ability to hold ourselves back. Says the Mishnah Berurah, why is it called an uman? That is a profession, the same way a professional, the only way he knows how to do his job is with years and years of practice, with years and years of study, with years and years of training myself how to do the best job that I can in this area of law, in this area of medicine, in this area of construction, whatever it might be. So too, he writes, that is what a person needs to think about when we deal with our mouths. It's not easy. It doesn't happen by itself. It's like an uman. That is a craft. That is something that takes a whole lifetime of work to figure out how exactly I'm going to learn how to hold myself back from saying things that I later on might regret. Rabbeinu Yonah writes in his commentary on Pirkei Avos, he says, when a Jew uses his or her mouth properly and with dignity, he says, Nasa atzmo kikli sharis. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, it makes it as if your mouth is a kli sharis. And the same way he says that a kli sharis in the Beis HaMikdash, a holy vessel that is used in the Beis HaMikdash, the same way when I pour flour and oil into that vessel, it now becomes kodesh, it becomes a karban. So too, he says, if I use my mouth properly, I have the ability to create with that mouth also a dvarim shebekdusha. I can make something mutter, I can make something usser, I can make something hektish, I can take a promise upon myself, I can make someone be chayiv misa b'dei shamayim based on the words that I say, all because my mouth is considered to be like a kli sharis. So one of the great Bali Musar, Rabbi Elia Lapian, once said that we know that when it comes to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur time, the Shulchan Aruch speaks in a number of places about the idea of Ein Kateger Nasa Sanegar, that you have to make sure that you don't use a certain kind of shofar for Rosh Hashanah because it's going to remind HaKadosh Baruch Hu of something negative that we once did. And so too, we don't wear jewelry on Yom Kippur because it's going to remind HaKadosh Baruch Hu of the terrible mistake of the Egel Azav, where we all threw in the jewelry to serve Avodah Zarah. All these kinds of ideas on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, we're hypersensitive, we make sure to go out of our way not to do anything that will remind him even remotely of the mistakes that we made in the past. Says Rav Elia Lapian, we're so careful not to wear jewelry on Yom Kippur. We're so careful not to do anything that's going to remind HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'Avera that we did. He says, imagine, you have the mouth that you use all year to speak Lashon Hara, to talk Rechilas, to do Motzi Shemra, all the things that we do with our mouths, and now you want to take that same Cheftza Shel Avera, that same mouth that you did the Avera with, not that it reminds HaKadosh Baruch Hu of a shofar that was inappropriate, not that it reminds HaKadosh Baruch Hu of the Egel Azav, of the jewelry that we once used thousands of years ago. That very same item, that very same mouth that we used to do things that we should not have done, we're now going to use that and say, I want to ask your mechila, I want that you should give us a good year, I want to daven to you, Avinu Malkeinu, give me all these kinds of things that I ask for on Rosh Hashanah, really? Says Rabbi Elia Lapian, how do you think that's going to work? If you're so careful not to do anything that reminds HaKadosh Baruch Hu of a sin, how can you use that same mouth that you didn't use appropriately throughout the year to beg HaKadosh Baruch Hu for his mechila, for his kapara, and for all the tshuva that you want to think about throughout the season of Rosh Hashanah and Yom HaKippur? My father always says every year that we're careful on Rosh Hashanah. It says in Shulchan Aruch that people have a practice not to eat nuts on Rosh Hashanah. Why? Because egos is begematria chait. So you don't want to remind HaKadosh Baruch Hu of chait, so we don't eat egos. And my father always says in Shir every year, Rosh Hashanah, chait is also begematria chait. Person who does an aver in Rosh Hashanah is worse than somebody who eats egozim. And we're also careful about them in Hagim, but then we come to the Rosh Hashanah meal and we talk some Lashon Hara, and we talk and we make fun of the guy who spoke in shul, and about the person who was davening next to us who didn't sit properly, didn't daven properly, didn't this, didn't that, about Tokeh, made a mistake. Chait is also begematria chait. Not just something that reminds us of chait, that is the Cheftza Shel Aveira, that is the chait itself. And one has to be so careful, kechala yotze mipiv yase, you have to be careful with the way one uses their mouth, with the way one uses their speech. That's what we learn from the whole Parsha of Nedarim. And this is why in Erev Rosh Hashanah we make sure to go out of our way to do a Hataras Nedarim. Not only to absolve ourselves of any promises that we may have made throughout the entire duration of the year, but also to remind ourselves of the tremendous potency and the power that a mouth can have. Look what it can create, look what it can destroy, look what it can do. And like Rabbi Elapian says, this is the mouth, this is the chefza that we want to use throughout the season of tshuva. We need to use our mouths to present ourselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and without doing something to overlook that process and make sure that we are doing it properly, we have to be careful that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be able to accept our tshuva if we're using that very same mouth. I'm reminded now that I speak about a story a couple of years ago, and then we'll break for mincha. I remember a number of years ago, my entire life, as long as I can remember, my father never drank a coffee. I think in our house, we didn't even have coffee in the house. Nobody in the family drank coffee when we were growing up. And my father never drank coffee. He always drank tea every day. He lived on tea all the time. And we always used to make him tea. And I thought it was so strange my whole life that my father drinks tea straight, just with a tea bag, nothing in it. Nothing added, no sugar, no sweetener, nothing, no milk. Never had anything in his tea. So I've tasted a plain tea before. It's pretty bland. It's not so exciting to drink that. I always thought it was strange, but I never bothered to ask. I guess he liked it. One Yom Tov, I remember Sukkot, we were eating by someone's home, and he was a very gracious host, and he started offering my father a cup of tea. So my father said, yes, thank you, I'll be happy to have a cup of tea. And the person said he's going to offer to bring sugar. My father said, no, I don't have sugar in the tea. He said, no, I'll go out of my way, I'll go to the kitchen, I'll get some sugar. Anyway, back and forth, he finally asked my father, how could it be? You drink tea without sugar? How do you drink such a thing? Why would you do that? I'm willing to go get it for you. So my father says, well, the truth is, around 50 years ago, this was right after my parents got married, they went to Eretz Yisrael for a summer, they were in Kiryat Arba, my father was giving shiurim. He said, 50 years ago, he was in Kiryat Arba, and they asked him to go visit someone's home. They needed chizuk, I don't know what it was. They asked my father to go visit this simple person's home in Kiryat Arba. My father said he was concerned about the kashrus, he didn't know their mafas, trumas, and maisrus, he didn't know what was going on in the house at all. So he said, he figured he's safe if he comes to the person's house and he says he just wants a tea. How can you go wrong with that? So the man goes to the kitchen, gets him a tea, makes it for him, and he comes out to the table with sugar. And my father said he realized, right when he came out with the sugar, he realized maybe there's a problem of tshumas and maisis on the sugar cane. Maybe there's no ashkach on the sugar. He wasn't sure what to do. So he told the man, I don't drink sugar in my tea. That's what he told him. So the man left it, and my father drank his tea. So he said 50 years later, he's still concerned, how can I come out being a liar to that man? I told him I don't drink sugar in my tea. 50 years later, what, now I'm going to start drinking sugar in my tea? I told him that's not the way I drink it. It means I had a cheshbon then, for whatever reason I said it, but it's 50 years later, I still have to keep my word. A person is careful with every word that you use, with every word that you speak. You're careful that you say the emes, that you say the truth, that you're an honest person. Not only in the way you speak, but in the way you present yourself to others as well. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu can answer your tefillos. That's what, before Rosh Hashanah, says Rabbi Elapian, we have to think about the way we use our speech, the way we use our mouths. And that's really what Hataras Nedarim is all about. On Erev Rosh Hashanah, when we think about all that we're going to use our mouths to do throughout the season of Rosh Hashanah, of Yom Kippur, of Aseres Yemei Tshuva, and the whole season, what we need to do first is to think about how it is that that mouth is used throughout the rest of the year. And only after we get past that hurdle are we able to then present our very same mouth to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and ask Him for all the different things that we need for the year to come.